Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Bubbling Adventure. We help busy parents who want to set their kids up for success by providing them tools to build a deeper connection with their family and to spend more stress-free time with their kids. I am your host, Julie, and each Thursday we are having conversations with guests on different themes, and our aim is to have open discussions, share different points of view, and learn in a non-judgmental way. In today's episode, Dr. Larry talks about how to apply your attention as a parent. With a 50 years career as a clinical, child forensic psychologist and 7 books under his belt, as well as his experience as a dad and now a granddad, Dr. Larry knows what he's talking about. We discuss how your attention is the most valuable thing to your kid and why it is important to catch them on the good. He also tells us his views on discipline, as well as his step-by-step guide to loving attention that includes how to avoid negative attention trap and how to apply planned ignore it. I hope you will enjoy this episode. If you do, please make sure to spread the love and share it with someone who might benefit from it. You can also write a review if you're listening from Apple Podcasts. Click on the 5-star button on Spotify and join us on Instagram at The Bubbling Adventure for daily parenting tips. But without further ado, let's begin.
Papa, papa, en faisant cette chanson.
Hi, Dr. Larry. How are you today?
Good morning. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. Thank you. Could you please introduce yourself for the audience?
Sure. I'm Dr. Larry Waldman. I'm a, I call it semi-retired clinical forensic psychologist. I've been in practice, I was in practice, I should say, for nearly 50 years in Phoenix, Arizona. I have stopped or retired from seeing patients actively since 2016, but I still speak, write, teach, consult, and things of that nature. And like this, guests on relevant, important podcasts.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us today. And so what made you want to become a forensic psychologist? Is it something that you always wanted to do as a kid, or when did it start?
Well, I always wanted to be a psychiatrist back when I was a child, but getting into med school kind of got in the way. And frankly, I'm now that I've been through it all, I'm glad of that, because in fact, I had a couple of psychiatrists in my office. And truthfully, I preferred the way psychologists operate as opposed to how psychiatrists work. So I had that interest all along. I got into the forensic part, which is basically the legal part of psychology. And I'm now referring to family law. I did close to 100 custody evaluations, or family studies, as they were called. I was appointed probably 50 times by judges as a parenting coordinator to help acrimonious parents who have now been divorced learn to communicate and more effectively manage their children after the divorce and so on. I also did a fair amount of personal injury work and things of that nature. So that came later. That came in about 2000. But I actually started in practice in 1979.
Okay, well, but there's a lot at stake in this specific field, right? Because it's with families, with children. So obviously it's very needed and, you know, you make such a big difference in their lives. But how did you cope with the pressure sometimes? Because it's, as I said, it's like so much at stake.
That's a good question, because a lot of my colleagues will avoid the courtroom as much as they can. But I found it to be challenging, frankly, more interesting. I mean, by the time I got into this legal work, I'd been in practice almost 25 years or so. And truthfully, sitting across from somebody and listening to their issues and so on, I have to admit, started getting a little boring. I probably heard some of those stories many, many times. Mm-hmm. So I like the challenge and so on. Besides, I have a son who's an attorney. I like to say I've never been to law school, but I've paid for it. So I was familiar with that. I had friends who are attorneys and so on. And so I liked it. I did. It was more interesting. It was more challenging. And I'll be honest, it was considerably more remunerative as well.
Okay, that's very interesting. I guess what I'm wondering as well is how it was impacting your family life. Did you learn a lot of things that were helpful for you and your kids? Or, you know, how is it, for example, for your kids to grow up with a psychologist? Do you know everything about them? Like, how does that work?
well, there's two questions there. One, the first question is, did it impact me mentally? One of the things you learn if you're a mental health practitioner is that, you know, you there's a difference between empathy and allowing it to really impact yourself personally. Because the truth of the matter is, if you allow that to impact you personally, you know, to the point where, you know, you're losing sleep or whatever, you've lost your effectiveness then as a clinician. So while I tried to be empathic with my clients or patients, I didn't really allow it to affect me personally. And over the years, I think I mastered that. I've had colleagues and so forth have trouble with that, and some of them had to leave the field. Now, way, way back when, before I became a private clinical psychologist, which, as I said, was in 78 or 9, I forget now. Prior to that, I was a school psychologist for several years, for 7 years, working in the schools. And I had some special ed teachers that really had a problem separating, you know, from the problems their students had. And some of them were, as I call it, taking it home with them because they didn't have the experience and training that I did. And I had to talk with some of them. Some of them were like speaking to the parents on a nightly basis, and so on. And you've got to draw some lines here. On, and they were allowing it to interfere with their personal life. And no, you can't do that. Now, what did it mean for my family? Well, of course, I think it helped. My wife and I have been happily married. It was 51 years this past August. Yeah. I raised two healthy, happy, productive sons. One is a very successful attorney, well married, and has our grandson. I don't call it their child; it's my grandson, yes. Who's 7, going on 17. And we enjoy him a lot. And my other son is a school psychologist. Now he is the director of special education in a school district in Washington State. He also is well married, and he has twins, fraternal twins, four. In fact, we just came back a couple of days ago from spending time with them and trick-or-treating with them, which was so much fun. So yeah, it made it easier for me. Sure, I think I knew how to raise them. I had a plan, and I think what happened is that my sons grew up to be responsible, resilient, caring men, and that's what it's all about. I'm very proud of them. It's probably my best achievement, if you will, aside from, of course, being married to my wife.
Congratulations on all of that. That sounds amazing. But yes, I think it would be interesting to talk about the plan that you had for your kids. And you also wrote 7 books in total. So I think it would be very interesting to see what you can share with our audience today.
Well, sure. I'd be glad to. Actually, this stems from my first book. It's entitled Who's Raising Whom? And I borrowed that title from a frustrated mother. She was sitting in my office saying, "Who's raising who here?" Well, it's actually whom, but who's raising who here? And she was right. She wasn't raising the kid. The kid was raising her. I believe that parenting is probably one of the most important jobs that we adults do. Raising a human being to become responsible and resilient and caring and moral and so on is a heavy responsibility. But the problem is that most parents don't get any training in it, very few. They don't take any courses, they don't read any books like mine, and so on. And so what happens is most parents basically parent the way they were parented, which in some cases is good, and so on. But truthfully, in the majority of cases, it's not. By the same token, I should add, many, many people marry the same way their parents were married. Mm-hmm. And then here again, it can be good or not, depending on where you come from and so on. So the science of what I call child management, and it is a science by and large, is not very fancy. It's not very technical. It's not very difficult to understand. It's just hard to implement. But the theory is simple. And basically, what it's based on is how does the parent dispense the most valuable thing they can give to their child, which is their attention. I mean, think about it. Parental attention at the beginning is life-giving. Mm-hmm. The parent doesn't hold the child, love it, look into his or her eyes, feed them, of course, care for them, and so forth, the child won't survive. Or we have cases where the parents kind of act with the child in a very stiff kind of manner. And yes, the child is alive, but is not thriving. There's a syndrome called failure to thrive. And we see that as well. And that comes from parents not providing loving attention, if you will. Mm-hmm. So here's the question. When do we attend to our children? Well, the research on this is very clear. And tons of it has been done. I'm familiar with most of it, so on. And what we basically find is that essentially, when the child is misbehaving, doing things the parent would wish them not to do, they receive parental attention about 90% of the time.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when the child is behaving acceptably, minding their own business, maybe playing cooperatively with their sibling or whatever, only 10% of the time does the child receive attention. So if the child is being reared in an environment where most of the time, most of the this needed attention is provided when they're misbehaving, and only 10% of the time is this attention being provided when they are being appropriate, how would we expect this child to behave?
Bad, yeah.
Badly, of course. Okay. Now, is this the child's fault? No, because remember, you know, the child was brought into this world naked and naive, as I like to call it. Okay. The child doesn't know what's good or bad, wrong or right, and so on. As far as they're concerned, the life they're living is it for everybody, as far as they're concerned. Now, every child, of course, you know, is born with this desire to get their parental attention. It starts from day one. The child is hungry, you know, and they instinctively cry or complain, go, and what does the parent do? Feed them. Okay, so very quickly, the first week of life, this child begins to see this connection between their behavior and the consequence to that behavior. Starts off very simply, you know, I cry, I complain, I get fed. Or after a while, very quickly, these little ones are very smart. By the time they're less than a month old, now they're sometimes crying, not just because they want milk, but because they want to be held. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it begins to broaden very quickly, and the parents don't even realize it. The kid, you know, they'll pick the kid up and put a bottle in the mouth or breast, as the case may be. And the kid isn't interested in drinking. They just want to be held. They put the child back down in the crib and starts crying again. And so I mean, very quickly, these little stink pots, as I sometimes, you know, are learning, there's power here. There's manipulation here and so on. And it starts from there. Mm-hmm. And the parent doesn't even realize that the child is actually manipulating them. Well,
yeah. Well, yeah, they're not conscious of it, but yeah.
Yes, right. And so it starts from there. And so, you know, over time, you know, what I try to teach parents is that how do you appropriately, judiciously apply your attention? Now, I like to say, I've said all the time, my kids manipulated me all around the block. They behaved well, and they got my attention. Mm-hmm. And as far as they're concerned, they were what, kids, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8 years old. They didn't know any better. They didn't know that this was different than anyone else. As far as they knew, they followed daddy's rules. They did what daddy asked, and daddy was pleasant, mm-hmm. appreciative, reinforcing. We did fun things, et cetera, et cetera. And so for me, parenting, I mean, look, we had, I'm not saying it was absolutely perfect, but compared to most, it was. It was relatively easy because I trained my kids to learn. It pays off to be good. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, many parents unbeknowingly teach their kids that you're going to get most of my attention, most of my time, most of my energy when you misbehave. Well, you can see where that leads. Now, that leads to frustration, you know, mm-hmm. and so on, and fatigue. I mean, you know, for some parents, by the time the day's over and the kid finally goes to sleep, and that can be a real chore too, I mean, they're exhausted.
Yeah.
Parents have this little cherub that they take home from the hospital when they're born, and they think, oh, this is so lovely and so forth. And by the time the kid's 2 or 3, they're ready to tear their hair off. But beyond the difficulty in the parenting process is, what are we teaching the child? And as I said to you in the warm up here, and I believe this strongly, the child who doesn't put his dirty underwear in the clothes hamper in the morning is the same child that's not responsibly doing their homework that night. So what we're doing then when we misuse our attention, as I call it, is that we're teaching the child, frankly, to be irresponsible. And for that matter, not very resilient either. And so on. So parents have to learn. There is a little bit of science in this process. Again, without getting, you know, I could speak on this all day. In fact, I teach this in classes and such, and obviously I've written about it. But if parents are willing to get educated and basically understand they have the power, they do.
Yeah.
It's how they use it. And if they use it right, they can make things a lot nicer around their house. But more importantly, it's not a matter of just making it easier. It's teaching the kid to be independent and responsible.
Mm. Right. And obviously it's best to implement that from day one, right? So that it's easier. But how can a family transition to that if it's not the case, for example, and they're stuck in a vicious circle where kids are misbehaving, for example?
I like your term, vicious circle, because that's exactly what's going on. I give it a technical name. I call it the negative attention trap, mm-hmm. where the kid basically expects negative attention. That's primarily all they're getting. And the parent pretty much expects that's the only time they're going to react anyhow, because they're so darn frustrated about the kid misbehaving. You know, if the kid finally behaves, they go and wash the dishes or do their checkbook or whatever, because they finally have a little peace. Yes. So you see, the cycle continues. But, and your question's a good one, the truth is, sure, is it best? Is it ideal that we start from day one? Absolutely. But does that mean that if you miss the boat that you can't turn it around? And the answer is no, you can always turn it around, at least until they become teenagers. I mean, I've had cases where the kid's 15 or 16 and the parents come into my office and they say, we don't like where this kid's going. We don't like some of the choices he's making and so forth. We'd like you to shape him up. And I'll say, wait a minute, you've lived with this kid for 16 and a half years, right? You want me to see him, for 45 minutes, twice a month, and I'm going to completely reshape him? I'm afraid the horse has already left the barn here. We'll do our best, and so on. But, within the first 10 years, absolutely. If parents change the environment, believe me, the child's behavior will change. I've worked with hundreds of parents with this program, and within a matter of a couple of weeks, things have turned 180 degrees.
Yeah, so do you go gradually? Like, how do you shift? Because I guess that it would be hard if they're misbehaving, let's say they're, drawing on the wall. Would the parents, for example, not give any attention at all? Or like, what would you recommend in for the transition to happen? Can you still say something, or would you just ignore and only praise them when they do something good?
Well, we're jumping way ahead, of course. Again, and this, of course, is what typically happens. When I meet with parents, what they are most interested in, first off, is what to do with all the bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. But you see, while I recognize that, what I tell them is, frankly, we can't work on that first. Because if we operate on that first, then what we're doing is continuing to give our valuable attention to inappropriate behavior. And this is what got us here in the first place. So the first step, basically, next to awareness, and that's probably first thing.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about that. But the first actual step is to increase the amount of good behavior that the child is exhibiting. And that's one of the first things that we have to teach parents. In other words, catch them when they're good. By the way, a lot of this applies to marriage as well. think about it. When you see, you know, couples and so forth, you know, are they, you know, does the husband, let's say to the wife, dear boy, that chicken parmesan you made was delicious. I love the way you take your time and cook for me. We don't talk about that. Most people don't talk about that. We talk about the bills, or you did this, you didn't do that, and how come this, and so on. You know, or does the wife say, as the husband's, you know, putting the dishes in the dishwasher, oh, honey, I love the way that you're so helpful, you know, and that you clean the dishes and so on. I cook and you clean. You know, that's such a great team. Do we reinforce each other that way? Rarely, pretty much on the same formula as parents do to kids. So some of this applies to, you know, our marital relationships as well. So what I'm saying is, one of the first things we have to do is get parents to become more aware of when the child is behaving well. Mm-hmm. And see, a lot of parents use what I call the sleeping dog philosophy, which is if the dog is sleeping, you leave it alone. If the kid's behaving appropriate, you leave it alone. No, no. If you want the child to continue that good behavior, you let the child know briefly and so on that you really like the way they're doing so-and-so. And that maybe, you know, right after lunch or something, maybe we'll bake brownies in celebration of what you were doing or something like that. Well, you were going to bake brownies anyhow, but now, you know, we're not, and you're going to get have the first one. You know, so now, you know, the kid was just there drawing nicely, or maybe he was playing nicely with his sister instead of teasing her and so forth. And you come in and say, oh, Johnny, I love the way you're playing checkers with Susie. That is so nice. You know, for you guys to be playing so cooperatively, in 15 minutes, let's go and make brownies. Well, you're going to do it anyhow, but now we're going to do that in celebration of this behavior.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the kid goes, well, it looks like, you know, playing cooperatively with Susie is a good thing, because now we're getting to have brownies. All right, I'm all over that. And you see what starts to happen. So that's the first step, is increasing the amount of appropriate behavior. So the child starts to learn that, oh, there are other ways to get my parents' attention. And so, you know, if you watched me when I was raising my kids, when they're little tykes and so forth, you know, throughout the day, I was telling them, I like the way they did that and good that. And boy, you know, when we're done with this, when you're done with this, we're going to go do this and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that is critical. And that is step 1, 2, and 3, if you will. You know, is that the kids have to learn it pays off to be good. That's what we really want to get across. First and foremost, before we do anything else. Now, you see, once the child learned that, again, when my kids were, now they're 4 years apart, of course, but when they were young, here I am, I'm reinforcing and I'm encouraging and I'm giving positive feedback and so on. And we're doing things, when we can and so on. And so, they saw me and their mom, of course, as people that, they wanted to please and who pleased them back and so on. Now, supposing that maybe they're starting to whine, I want to do this. I would just do that.
Mm-hmm. Turn your head, ignore, and
right. Yeah. Or maybe even walk out of the room, you see. Well, all of a sudden, to them, this was, oh, wait a minute here.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. Daddy is fun, and I enjoy being with him, and he's praising, and we're doing things together and so on. But when I did this, all of a sudden, he's not even looking at me, or he walks out of the room. Mm-hmm. Well, guess I don't want to do this anymore. So yeah. You see, by instituting this sense of reinforcement for good behavior, you now have even more control, not only of increasing the good behavior, but also now you can even address the inappropriate behavior by not responding to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you see, that's why you don't do that first, because what else do they know? But once you've instituted this reinforcement program, of course, then by not providing attention to it, it's a big deal. And my kids would come, daddy, I'm sorry, I'm a, you know, they knew what they were doing, those little stinkers. And then, you know, so now we have this combination of, you know, this reinforcement. And again, this is the key. You really got to institute that first. But once that's in place, all right, then you can move forward to, you can move to what we call planned ignoring, or behaviorists refer to this as extinction, not attending to the inappropriate behavior. It's a very powerful thing. In fact, I've prescribed this little experiment to hundreds of my patients. And what I tell them is, the next time your kids, start squabbling and so forth, just pick up, leave the room, don't say a word, go into your bedroom, sit on the edge of the bed, leave the door open, and just look at your watch and see what happens. And then when we meet next time or next week, whenever, you tell me what occurred. And they always say the same thing. And they say, oh, I was so afraid to do that. I was afraid they would beat each other to a pulp. There'd be blood on the floor. But I did it. And I said, okay, so what happened? And she said, within 15 seconds, they're now up in my room in front of me, arguing in front of me. He did this. No, she did this. And I said, okay, now what did you learn from that? And she said, yes, I'm part of their argument, aren't I? I said, yeah. Because what have you taught them? That when they argue, finish it for me.
You have to discipline and pick sides and so on.
Well, what do the children learn? When they argue, what does the parent do? Play referee.
They have to pick sides between.
but think about it. What's your goal here? Is your goal to teach the kids that you can start fighting anytime you choose, and when you do, you can be sure mommy or daddy will break you up? Mm-hmm. Is that what we want our kids to learn? No. I want my kids to learn to settle their own stuff. They're not going to beat each other to death. I doubt that. No. What they need to learn is how to settle things, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good skill to take into life.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
How to resolve things, how to calm yourself, those are good things to learn. If we're doing it for them all the time, and they're certainly willing to let us do that, we're not accomplishing anything. In fact, we're getting in the way.
Definitely.
So, and of course, what the parent learns is that the kids are bringing the fight to them. Yeah, mom, come on, we're up in your bedroom now, fix it for us. Duh.
Yeah. That's true. And also just I remember my little sister always be like, Mom! You know, every time there was a problem and I was like, shh. It's definitely bringing the parents to do the dirty work.
Yeah. You know, these kids are so smart. I'll just share something with you. As I said, we were just up in Northwest with our grandkids and we spent, we also were there helping because they were working and their preschool was closed. So we were actually caring for them. Mm-hmm. And I observed this scene. And they're 4-year-olds. The little boy was playing with a toy. Mm-hmm. The little girl decided she wants that toy.
Yeah.
So she goes over to her brother and tries to grab it out of his hands. Now, he holds on to it. And being a little boy, he's probably a little stronger than her. Okay. Yeah. So he holds on to it. So she pulls and then lets go. And then starts to scream like someone ripped out her tonsils. Now, her mother was just about ready to leave to go to work, but she now hears her daughter screaming. She mm-hmm. comes into the room, looks at me. I watched the whole thing. I didn't do anything. And she sees this little girl and picks up this little girl and comforts her and then scolds the little boy, assuming he hurt her. And I just sat there and I didn't say a word.
Hmm.
But this little girl orchestrated that entire thing.
Of course. That's what my sister was doing to me.
Yeah, setting you up. And you and Mom were played into it. That's how smart they are. So it's a funny thing. You know, my grandkids have learned when Papa and Nana babysit, we don't play by the same rules. Okay? Mm. When anyone starts to whine, I just simply point. And there's a little area that where all their toys are in and so forth. But I refer to that as the calming room or sometimes the crying room. Well, so while we're after their mom left, it was a couple hours later. Again, she started to whine about something that didn't, frankly, she whines too much. But anyway, she started to whine about something. And before I could even raise my hand, her brother says, I won't say her name, go to the whining room. She walked into the room. Okay. She wasn't there 5 seconds, turned around and engaged again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still important to have a place to process your emotions because obviously you don't want to teach them to just repress it. So I think it's really positive to still have that place and that it doesn't affect everyone else.
No, you're free to whine. I just don't have to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly are not going to benefit from it. And that's a mistake a lot of parents do. Well, the classic example, Timmy, 6, comes into the kitchen. It's close to dinner time. Says to Mommy, and Mommy has baked some cookies now for dessert. Mommy, I want a cookie. What does Mommy say? Well, it's close to dinner time. What does she say?
Yeah, she says, not right now, later. Or
exactly. Mom says, no, Timmy, a cookie will spoil your dinner. If you eat a good dinner, you can have a cookie for dessert. Okay. Gives Timmy a nice long explanation, but there it is. Okay. What does Timmy do?
He starts crying.
Yeah. I mean, does Timmy go, oh, okay, good explanation, Mom. Thanks for the info. I'll come back later. No. Timmy says, yeah, but I want a cookie. And so what does Mom do?
Gives in.
Not the second time.
No.
She repeats herself, right? Mm-hmm. Gives the same explanation all over again as if he's deaf, right? He heard the first one, but now he says, but I want a cookie. So Mom says, Billy, or Timmy, whatever. Timmy, we're going to have dinner in 20 minutes or 15 minutes. If you eat a good dinner and so on, Does it end there?
No.
Of course not. Timmy knows now he's got mom on the hook. Okay? You know, he can do this, and he's now got mom's pure attention. She's not cooking anymore. She's focused on him. And every time he asks, she's going to give him the same explanation. But mommy, I want a cookie. And mom goes, now she's getting a little more, Timmy, I told you already, no cookie until after dinner. The explanations get a little shorter, but she's still attending to him.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't stop him. Maybe the fourth time. Now he's about ready to have a tantrum, or at least look like it, right? Mm-hmm. I want a cookie. Now, mom at this point is so frustrated. Plus, she wants to get back to making dinner, and she's tired of this stuff and so forth. And so what does she do?
Gives the cookie.
Give in. All right, here, take your darn cookie and leave the kitchen. And he does, and he walks away with a little smirk on his face. Mm-hmm. Now tell me, here's the $64 question. What has Timmy learned?
That if he screams enough or like keeps asking and being persistent, then he can have whatever he wants.
Absolutely. Very good. Now, is that a skill we want to teach our kids? To persist in being obnoxious to get whatever it is you want?
No, unless they're salesmen.
So. Yes.
No, I said unless they're salesmen, then no.
Yeah, but salesmen aren't being obnoxious.
No.
At least not trying to be. But yes, that's the point, you see. And yet that mother probably the following morning is talking to his girlfriend, says, oh, you know, Timmy, I don't know what's wrong with him. He's so stubborn. He takes after his Uncle Willie, you know, as if it's genetic.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's learned.
And it
who
could
taught
be,
him?
But it could be the same pattern as well, right? Like, as you mentioned in the beginning, because you tend to just, depending on your education and so on, but like you tend to just do the same thing that you know. So it could maybe seem like it's genetic, but it's just because you're repeating the patterns that you've been through as well as a kid or taught, right? And it just seems like it's genetic, but it's just the same education style that was received.
Again, you know, we do what we've learned, you know, as parents and as kids. So here again, what parents aren't being aware of is, you know, is they're falling into these traps, if you will. And we're not, you know, again, not only does it lead to difficult parenting, because now you got a kid who doesn't take no for an answer, at least not the first time, maybe not even the fourth time, you know, and so on. You know, and so now you got to repeat yourself all the time. You think that takes a lot of time and frustration. It makes parenting very hard.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be that way. And so my kids learned, you know, I'll tell you what, I mean, here's what I do. And I'm cooking dinner and I want a cookie and I'd say, no, you can have a cookie after your nice dinner. Okay. If they come back a second time, I'd say, I gave your answer. And for asking me again, your brother will have a cookie for dessert, but you will not. Now leave the kitchen. Done. Now that may sound harsh, you see, but it's simple. And by the way, they learn when dad said something, it was in iron.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, when I said no the first time, sometimes maybe I would just quickly look at him. And that might send the signal, you want to follow up with this? It's probably not going to end well for you. And they knew it, you see, and they'd walk out.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it's also just testing the boundaries as well. Like, it's normal as a kid.
Absolutely.
And even as an adult, sometimes, you know, you just want to see how far you can go. It's all about like finding yourself I also know like some kids just try to push to see how far their parents are gonna still be there for them, you know, Like half well,
again,
ago.
You make yeah. you know you make great points, and you're absolutely right. And here's the point. Here's the problem. If we're not setting limits for our kids, and frankly, most parents aren't, then the child doesn't know where the limits are, and they're going to find them, or at least.
And the parents don't know where the limits are either. So
exactly,
nobody knows.
But you see, with me and my wife, because of course. Well, she taught fourth grade for 30 years. And so between us, we strategized, and that's what parents should do. You know, we were in this together and so on. You know, my kids knew their limits. I mean, I remember, oh my God, this is, my older son was in college. My younger son was still in high school. And he was, my son from college was home. And I took the boys out. We had a boys' night out. We played pool and so on. And we were having dinner. We didn't have dinner somewhere. And there was another family sitting across from us. You know, parents, you know, grandma and grandpa, and two little kids, like maybe 4 and 6. Okay. Well, the two kids are running around the table in the restaurant. And one of them almost trips a waiter with a tray full of food. And the grandmother says, you know, Joshua, be careful. Not get your butt on your seat, but be careful. You almost tripped away. And so, and both my sons immediately looked at me and said, you know, if that were us, we would have been sitting in the car in the parking lot by now. And I said, most likely, yeah. So see, they knew what their limits were.
Yeah, like what respect is as well, like for other people. Sure. And yeah, but that's also something I see a lot right now. I think nowadays is with a screen where, and I completely understand that in certain settings, it's so much easier to just give the screen to the kid, for example, in a restaurant or something, if they can't sit through the meal or, you know, they're being fussy or something, a lot of parents just give them the screen, which, like, to each their own, I understand that it's easier, but like, how would you do in this situation, for example?
Well, again, first thing, one of the first things I would do is, of course, set an expectation. And that is, you know, if you can finish your meal and remain in your seat, when you're done, we will have a dessert. So there's so it's not a threat. It's not, if you don't do this, you won't get this. And parents screw that up too, unfortunately. It's if A, then B. Okay. So you set the expectation. And again, my kids knew when I said, if A, then B, then that's the way it is. And that if they didn't do A, they sure as heck aren't going to get B.
Yeah. Right?
No matter how much they want and so on. So that would be, so I'm setting the stage to begin with. Okay? Now, if I have to ask them a second, if they maybe get off their chair once, maybe because they're young, I might say, remember our deal. And then I would always say, and that's the last time you're going to hear me say that. So they knew.
Yeah,
that's it. Lines drawn in the sand. Yeah. You get off the seat chair again. Dessert's gone. Now that doesn't mean your brother isn't going to get dessert, and I'm not going to get dessert. Everybody might get dessert, but you're not, because you didn't buy into the contract. You didn't fulfill the contract. Now, if it still happens, of course, and he's getting up and around and disturbing other people, I would take him by the hand and we would walk outside and we would sit in the car. And then after I would call my wife, then my wife would come and relieve me and I would finish, you know, my meal and so forth and such. Okay. And then when we got home, that child knew that upon coming home, the first thing they're going to do is go to bed without a story. So my kids understood that, you know, if you, again, buy into the contract, behave well, life is good, choose not to, there are going to be consequences. Now, you're not going to be screamed at, you're not going to be slapped, you're not going to be spanked, but you are going to suffer a consequence, which, by the way, you'll get over by the next day, which is part of building resilience.
Yeah.
So that they learn, okay, when I mess up, Yes, there's a consequence, but it's not going to scar me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess it's also preparing them for school and the work life where, you know, if you don't do your work or if you just like come in late or if you do whatever, like there is a consequence for your actions. And I think that sometimes kids are shielded from that and have to learn the hard way. So I think it's like a long term, it's also positive that they understand that anything they do has a consequence attached to it, good or bad.
I love your reframes. Thank you. Absolutely. I mean, that you're right on. Isn't that what we want to teach our kids? In my head, from the day I put that baby in my arms, I looked in his eyes and I'm thinking, all right, it's my job to raise you to be an independent, responsible, caring, moral young man. Yes. And they need to learn there are consequences for inappropriate behavior. Mm-hmm. That's life.
And for good behaviors as well, I guess, as well, because then it also, like, your whole method is also just praising them for the good, which is a positive consequence where when you do good things, then good things come to you and so on. So I think it really goes both ways, which is something that I like. It's not focusing only on the negative consequence or something like that. Like, I think it's really just, it's teaching life as well. Like, if you do good things then come to you and you don't have to suffer the negative consequences.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Is there any last advice that you would like to share with parents today?
Well, I think in a nutshell, if I have to, you know, condense it into a one sentence and so forth, is catch your kids when they're good.
Yeah.
And your spouse as well.
Oh yeah, working as a team is so important. Yes, and sometimes it can be tricky, but yeah, that's it's so important, I think, when both parents are aligned, because otherwise, as kids, you tend to always go to one of the two because you know that it's easier. So yeah, sometimes there's good cup, bad cup, and you just choose the good cup when you can.
Well, that's part of the strategizing that I refer to later. Mm-hmm. And as parents, that's deadly. If you're allowing the kid to play, you know, one parent off against the other, you're going to have your hands full. You need to be united, even if you think the other parent might be wrong, at least as far as the kids are concerned. If you think, you know, one parent was, you know, too harsh or too easy, you know, you in front of the kid, you let it go. But at that night, you sit and talk about it and say, look, you know, when you did so-and-so, I thought you were too this or too that. I think we need to talk about this and let's, you know, do it differently next time or whatever.
Yeah.
And so not in front of the kids. As far as the kids are concerned, they need to be united. My kids learned, if they even tried to play one off against the other, the penalty was automatically doubled.
Hmm.
So they didn't do that very much.
I bet. No, yeah, I think it's very important. And yeah, no, thank you so much, Dr. Larry. I mean, I've learned a lot and I'm sure that everybody listening has learned a lot as well. So we will link everything, like all your work, your website, your books, and so on. Thank you so much for taking the time to share so many valuable lessons with us.
My website is toppphoenixpsychologist.com. You're also welcome to email me at LFW, those are my initials, LFW at LarryWaldmanPhD.com. I have several books, as you mentioned. The first one that I showed you here, this one again, is entitled Who's Raising Whom? My second one is Coping with Your Adolescent. In fact, I like to say, if you don't read the first one, you are definitely going to need the second. My marriage book is entitled How Come I Love Him But Can't Live With Him? The fourth one is Too Busy Earning a Living to Make Your Fortune. Fifth one is Overcoming Your Negotiophobia, Negotiating Your Way Through Life. The sixth one is The graduate course you never had, that's for professionals and how to develop a mental health practice. And the book I recently did during COVID is entitled Love Your Child More Than You Hate Your Ex, What Every Divorced Parent Needs to Know. And they're all available either through my website or, of course, through Amazon. So I very much appreciate your time and this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Dr. Larry. We will put all the links in the show notes so everyone can find them easily. And it's good because there's books for every stage of life. So I'm sure people will appreciate it, like no matter what stage of their kids' education they're on. So that's perfect. You got it all covered. But thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Feel free to share if you think it might be helpful to someone you know. If you enjoyed this episode, then please make sure to write a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and subscribe if you haven't already. That's it for me. See you soon with the next episode. And in the meantime, have a lovely day.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.